Nobody can be too Jewish.
That's exactly it. You got it.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, your weekly serving of everything Jewish, now grilled to perfection for summer. We've got news, music, comedy, and conversation, all kosher, all cool. Today, we'll catch a breeze with International Jewish Affairs expert Tom Price, and maybe even a pun or two. So grab your sunglasses and your sitter for the Too Jewish Summer Edition.
Shalom. I've been thinking this past week about Jewish denominationalism, that is, the ways that Jews, particularly in America, identify or don't identify with movements or streams of Judaism. According to most sociologists who study the North American Jewish world, we're now in a time of post-denominationalism. That's a fancy phrase that means allegiance to the various organized branches of Judaism has significantly weakened, and in which Jewish self-expression has changed dramatically, especially for younger generations of American Jews. Well, today I'd like to explore that process and its history, and just what's been happening in the Jewish world over the past, oh, I don't know, two decades or so. It's a kind of midsummer reckoning on where we are as a Jewish community in July of 2025.
Summer in the city, back of my neck getting dirt and gritty. Bend down, isn't it a pity? Doesn't seem to be a shadow in the city. All around, people looking half dead, walking on the sidewalk harder than a match head. But at night, it's a different world.
As we go into this midsummer review, let me give you some sense of where I come from on the American Jewish world. I began my career as a conservative cantor or chazan. I was all of 17 years old when I started, by the way, but I am still a member of the Cantors Assembly, the professional organization of conservative movement cantors. Then went on to the established Reform Rabbinical School, Hebrew Union College Jewish Institute of Religion, where I was ordained as a Reform rabbi. I served conservative congregations as cantor and sometimes spiritual leader for 7 or 8 years, and I've now been a congregational rabbi and cantor in the Reform movement for over 30 years. My own congregation, for the past 7 years, Beit Simcha, here in Tucson, Arizona, where I live, doesn't have a movement affiliation officially. We use the Reform movement's Shabbat and High Holy Day prayer books and Torah commentaries, our own prayer book for other festivals, and we have members who span the Jewish religious spectrum, from modern Orthodox to ultra-Reform, with plenty of conservative movement refugees, a good number of Jews by choice who converted to Judaism, and some people who could fit into Reconstructionist or Renewal congregations, plus a few Chabad defectors. I've also been hosting this Too Jewish radio show and podcast for some 23 years now. Wow. And talking to Reform, Conservative, Orthodox, Chabad, Reconstructionist, Renewal, and Secular Jews all over America, Israel, and the rest of the world through all of that time. My perspective on the American Jewish world is informed by, well, all of that background, and I hope it's fairly objective and that this will prove to be a useful show and a valuable analysis. Or at least an interesting one. I mean, we strive here on Too Jewish to inform, but also to entertain. Now, to start, there was a time not that long ago, maybe 15 or 20 years ago, not long after we started doing the Too Jewish radio show, when most American Jews would say, I'm a Reform Jew, or I'm a conservative Jew, or I'm Orthodox. Unless they were in the minority and they said, I'm not religious, or I'm a socialist atheist Jew, or even, I'm a bad Jew. Even most of those folks would have had a sense of connection to one of the three most prominent movements, Reform, Conservative, or Orthodox. There were other corners of the Jewish world even then, including the small but somewhat influential Reconstructionist movement. There were plenty of Chabad rabbis who would stop you on the street or knock on your door and put on telethons in order to drag random Jews to their synagogues. And there were Renewal Jews, more touchy-feely and mystical in Jewish practice, plus marginal institutions like the Kabbalah Center, which capitalized on celebrities going into some aspect of Jewish tradition. There were also burgeoning groups of Jews who had communities, most of them small, but some fairly good-sized, who prayed together and studied together and did holidays together, but weren't formally organized. They were called independent minyans or kolels or some other kind of collective name. Most of those were Orthodox or conservative minyanim, independent of any movement. Now, still, with all of that religious ferment, the major movements had most of the people and most of the institutions and most of the resources of the American Jewish world, you know, Reform, conservative, or Orthodox. In addition, there were the many Jewish organizations focused on supporting and connecting with Israel, as well as more domestically oriented Jewish organizations, Jewish community centers, Jewish family and children's services programs, Hillels on college campuses, the ubiquitous Federation movement that raised funds to support all those entities. Well, frankly, federations contributed almost nothing to synagogues, but they raised funds for other organizations and causes and for Israeli charities. And there were many other Jewish entities, too, that were perhaps a little more segmented. Jewish day schools, Jewish camp programs for children and teens, Holocaust memorials, centers and museums, Jewish environmental organizations, Jewish arts entities and organizations, Judaic studies programs at universities and colleges, even departments, Jewish genealogy societies, and on and on. Still, synagogues affiliated with one of the major movements formed the backbone of Jewish communities everywhere. In smaller communities, synagogues were the Jewish community, and all the other Jewish organizations and causes utilized their facilities and personnel. Well, that's not exactly how it works these days. First of all, while the major movements, Reform, Conservative, and Modern Orthodox, certainly still exist and function, all have been diminished, even radically so, over the past 18 to 20 years. The conservative movement in particular has fallen on very hard times indeed, shrinking in affiliation by about 65% over that period, losing congregations through attrition and merger until there are now about half as many conservative synagogues in North America as there were during the movement's 1960s to 1980s heyday, and the synagogues that have survived are, by and large, much smaller than they used to be. The Reform movement is holding on a bit better. It is certainly the largest Jewish religious movement in North America and has been so since 1990. Its members, however, are aging rapidly. Its affiliated synagogues have actually declined, not by that much, maybe 10% since Reform's peak around 2008, and the size and resources of Reform congregations have diminished ever since that year's real estate crash, while membership has further been damaged by the pandemic. Perhaps most significantly, the Reform movement's once excellent national organizations, which were the most effective of all the national Jewish religious groups, have become ill-focused and much less effective versions of themselves after a couple of reorganizations. There's a general disconnect from the congregations and Reform Jews that they are supposed to represent. In addition, both the Reform and Conservative movements are currently suffering from a lack of qualified rabbis and cantors. Fewer and fewer young people are choosing to attend the seminaries and devote the years necessary to prepare for a career in a shrinking profession and shrinking movements. Now, the modern Orthodox world was initially energized by a Baal Tshuva movement, a return to traditional observance and practice among younger Jews back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. That trend, too, has faded. There are significant fractures between the more open approach in Orthodoxy adopted by younger observant Jews and the major institutions of the Orthodox world, which are less open. The vast majority of the American Jewish population, in 2025 anyway, does not practice according to Orthodox law, halacha. The potential for growth has thus always been somewhat limited in Orthodoxy. And those Jews who choose to be Orthodox today are now more likely to move from their modern Orthodox synagogue roots towards the easier accessibility of Chabad synagogues. Ah, Chabad. Now that's a trend that might not have been so easy to predict. This pre-modern form of ultra-Orthodoxy has become ubiquitous now throughout the world. It is what many non-Jews think all Jews are. By focusing on outreach to all kinds of Jews, including unaffiliated Jews, but also those who belong to other congregations without respect to their current associations and relationships, and by pretending that Chabad does not require dues payments, it has spread everywhere. Its allegiance is to Chabad Hasidic Judaism, a form of ultra-Orthodoxy, but it is not devoted to the general Jewish institutions that exist already in many Jewish communities. That is, Chabad wants people to participate in its services, dinners, holiday events, and fundraisers in order to bring them to its idiosyncratic and messianic-oriented version of Orthodox Judaism. Chabad does not support the general Jewish community institutions, like Jewish Community Center, Jewish Family and Children's Services, or the Federation Movement. It focuses instead on raising funds from its members and attendees and other Jews it guilts into giving its support for its own causes. This has proven to be effective. You don't require people to pay dues to be part of the synagogue, but you constantly solicit them to support specifically Chabad programming. Now, there are certainly other kinds of synagogues and groups out there besides the ones I've discussed. They practice their own variations of Judaism in their own often creative ways. But the truth is, all of this synagogue and Jewish religious activity is sort of beside the point. What has become clear over the last 15 to 20 years is that most American Jews are simply opting out of regular Jewish religious experience altogether. The statistics aren't definitive, but it is probable that well over half the Jews in America do not belong to any synagogue at all. In the latest surveys, over a quarter of young American Jews don't even consider themselves Jewish by religion. That is, they are ethnically Jewish or Jewish by descent, but don't consider themselves Jewish as we would otherwise define a Jew. In general, this trend is more obvious the younger the surveyed group is. The youngest Jewish adults have the least connection to being actively Jewish, and so on. Mind you, this is true in an American world in which Jewish movies and TV shows have proliferated at an astonishing and, frankly, unprecedented rate, in which being Jewish was, until the last couple of years, generally seen as a positive thing by nearly all Americans. That means that while Jews were being more and more accepted by Americans, there were more and more public media examples of Jewish life to see, we Jews were actually becoming, on balance, less Jewish. There's another important factor here. The focus on supporting Israel and the increasing passion of those associations has pulled some Jewish leaders and congregations away from involvement and support of Jewish religious life at large and focused them solely on pro-Israel action. Similarly, the rise in anti-Semitism over the past few years, acutely so since October 7, 2023, has moved others from more broad Jewish involvement, including participation in synagogues and holidays and Jewish learning, and turned them instead towards action against anti-Semitism. Valuable, but probably not sustainable in the long run. These last two trends have exacerbated a generational divide among Jews who might otherwise have continued to gather to pray and study together across those boundary lines of age and join to do social action work together. Significantly, younger Jews today don't typically have the same attitudes towards Israel their parents and grandparents did. Not having lived through the existential struggles Israel had to endure to protect its very existence, younger Jews tend to be much more lukewarm about Israel. Much of the information they've seen on media and social media has been harshly critical of Israel, and if they are on the liberal side of the political spectrum, they have very likely absorbed progressive ideas that see Israel not as it is, the only Jewish nation on earth and the survivor of genocidal attempts by enemies for 75-plus years, but as a white colonial nation usurping the rights of indigenous Palestinians. That is, in fact, a preposterous falsehood paid for and promulgated by Arab and Iranian anti-Semites, but that doesn't mean that lots of young American Jews haven't absorbed those ideas. It's another factor that doesn't move young Jews into synagogues, which pray regularly for the welfare of the State of Israel. That also means that younger Jews, those in their 20s and 30s in particular, are very unlikely to belong to a synagogue at all, or to have any thoughts about joining one, even when they have kids. Oh, and one more important point, these same young Jews are having fewer and fewer children. The average number of children among Jewish families in America these days is down to 1.5, well under replacement level. And by the way, that includes Orthodox families who are likely to have more kids. Still, there aren't that many Orthodox Jews proportionally. Take away the high Orthodox birth rate, we're still looking at a Jewish birth rate of 1.4. Oof. So, where are we now? Does all this mean that the American Jewish community is doomed in the long run to fade into irrelevance and assimilation? Strangely, I don't personally or professionally think that. But we are at a point in which some choices need to be made by the organized Jewish community, and made soon. Over the past half century, we've found ways to support many Jewish institutions and causes, to focus our energy and attention on so many other ways that people can express Judaism besides synagogues, which was all well and good, but as we did so, we ignored the only organization that makes people actively Jewish, the synagogue. We put our energies into causes and efforts that, while noble, will not guarantee that new generations of Jews will know how to pray, study, and think in the amazing ways our tradition offers. What we need to do, and quickly, is redirect our efforts to support the most creative and valuable of the synagogues that exist now, regardless of denominational affiliation, and give them the ability to grow our Jewish community in fresh and meaningful ways. The heart of Jewish community is now, as it always has been and will always be, effective synagogues. If we wish to see American Judaism flourish, we need to focus on supporting the only institution that can do that in ways we simply haven't for much too long. It's time now. To play us in this morning, here's Chazan Aaron Ben Susan singing his quite wonderful Echad Odi, a song of welcome for Shabbat, coming soon to a synagogue near you. Chazan Aaron Ben Susan's Lechad Odi for the Sabbath, best spent, you know, at a temple. When we come back this morning on Too Jewish, we will continue with our very special Midsummer Edition. Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a fabulous Jewish synagogue in northwest Tucson in the Catalina foothills, celebrates a terrific array of services, classes, and events this summer and fall. Established almost 7 years ago by congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha is a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. Progressive congregation in northwest Tucson and the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everybody throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us for Shabbat services or come on Facebook Live. We welcome members and guests in our sanctuary, and there's always delicious food afterwards. Call 520-276-5675 or go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. Religious school is signing up now. School-age children and grandchildren, join us in our fabulous Hebrew school, Bar and Bat Mitzvah programs, Torah Tykes Experience, Confirmation, and Teen programs, all in a fun, relaxed setting with great Jewish learning. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org, to sign up. Beit Simcha services, classes, and events are open to all. We have a wonderful event coming up August 3rd, Sunday night, August 3rd, Pastrami and Schmaltz. Musical improv with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, as a guest star. Never done it before. We'll see. And fabulous Jewish kosher deli meal afterwards. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org to sign up. BeitSimchaTucson.org. Beit Simcha's services, classes, and events are open to everyone. In-person Friday night services are at 6:30 p.m. Shabbat morning services are at 10 a.m., preceded at 9 o'clock with Torah study, all with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, leading them. Facebook page is Beit Simcha Tucson, BeitSimchaTucson, and you can enjoy all of our musical services by virtual experience weekly. All of our Adult Education Academy classes are taught live and on Zoom. For more information about Beit Simcha, to come to services, religious school, and Torah Tykes programs, Bar and Bat Mitzvah, Confirmation, high school programs, and rich array of Adult Education Academy courses taught live and on Zoom, and all of our services in person and on Facebook, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 520-276-5675. BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, in the fastest growing Jewish congregation in all of southern Arizona. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or akvel, please email us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail. Or visit our website, TooJewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, TooJewishRadio.com, streaming us from there, downloading us from the Apple iTunes stores, very popular Jewish podcast, top 10 in America. According to Moment Magazine, over 250,000 downloads on Podbean and on Spotify. Post a rating, review Too Jewish wherever you listen to us. Those comments all help. We have a new segment this morning in our midsummer edition of Too Jewish. I'll hear from some of the newer Jewish comedians. Yochai Sponder is my favorite Israeli comedian, and he is just as funny in English as he is in Hebrew.
In America, we have the PC, politically correct. You can't do it. I said, what's PC? Because in Israel, we do stand up like in the 90s, you know? You say what you say. You gay, you know, you enjoy. You enjoy the show. It's not like here. So I said, what's PC? He said, you can do jokes about what you are. If you're Jewish, do jokes about Judaism. If you are, for example, you know what you are, you can do. So I open the show with who I am, and we'll go from there, okay? Whatever I am, I can do, okay? Okay. So, I'm half Moroccan and half Polish. Moroccan, Morocco, I can do jokes, don't get offended. I can do jokes about Moroccans, also about Africa, because Morocco is in Africa. Whatever you can do, Africa. My mom grew up speaking Arabic. You do jokes about Arabic, Islam. this thing I can do. Also, my father is Polish. Poland, Holocaust jokes I can do. Whoever participated in the war, Germany, Austria, England, whatever, France, Russia, Ukraine, all of these I can do. Those who didn't participate, even more. Why they didn't help? I can do. Also, I was born in Israel, which is Asia, so I'm Asian. Totally Asian. If you're Asian, or family, these jokes I can do. I also got married to an American lady 2 years ago, guys. American lady. And I just got the paper done. I got the paper done. So I'm not only American, I'm African-American right now. I can do. However, some parts in my body are more Asian, but we're not gonna talk about this tonight.
That was the brilliant and very funny Yochai Sponder, our new Jewish comedian segment on Too Jewish, which he kicks off. He has so many great bits. Always right on point for, you know, right now. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation, known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of Southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen. 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We started talking about Turkey last week, setting the scene in the Muslim world in terms of the three main groups in the Middle East, Turks, Arabs, of course, and Persians, Iranians, and how Turkey has long vied to be the leader of the whole Muslim world, and at times really has been, in Ottoman times, for example. Let's fast forward a little bit to the situation today.
Okay, with pleasure. Just a brief word about my qualifications to speak on this subject. I never actually lived and worked in Turkey, but I had a position at the State Department, which was Deputy Director for Southern European Affairs, which included Greece, Turkey, and Cyprus. And in that position, I made many official trips and visits to both Ankara and Istanbul. Plus, when I worked for the international organization called the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, which was the last job I had before moving to Tucson. My closest colleague and best friend there was a Turkish female diplomat who was and is absolutely brilliant. And she was the deputy chief of mission for Turkey in Moscow while still in her 30s. So that's like proof positive that she's an extremely successful diplomat. And she is, like most people from Istanbul, a very moderate cosmopolitan Muslim. One of her grandmothers is a Jewish woman from Thessaloniki, So Jaron is very mixed and not really chauvinist at all. But even she has fallen sway to some of the latest developments in Turkey, to which I'll turn right now. So first of all, we should make clear that Erdogan's base of support is mostly rural fundamentalists, what in America would be like rednecks.
It's funny. I remember visiting friends in Istanbul, very sophisticated. They had a butler, very sophisticated, right, well-off Jews in Turkey. And I mentioned, I thought Erdogan, you know, made some sense. And they're like, he is just a hick. He comes right from a fundamentalist part. You know, he's got right support from people who just aren't lettered. It was real. They were not happy right with him. And this is years ago.
Well, the Turkish intelligentsia, and particularly the Jews, always spoke French at home. I mean, they might have spoken Ladino in the synagogue or at the Seder table, but their language of daily operations was French. And that harks back to the years when French was the international language of the upper classes, even in Russia, in Serbia, in lots of other places. So suffice it to say that as the cities in Turkey, and particularly in Western Turkey, get bigger, Erdogan's power base shrinks. And this includes places like Izmir, which in Greek is Smyrna on the west coast, probably the third biggest city in Turkey, and many other places. So Erdogan's hold on power is not nearly as solid as many people believe or fear. And he's well aware of that and acts in many ways to protect himself, like certain other far-right extremist leaders around the world. And this is not something limited to Turkey and Erdogan. But what is unusual is that after centuries of being a relatively welcoming place for Jews, Turkey underwent two sort of convulsions. One was in the 1950s when, largely due to an economic downturn, there was a big move to purge Turkey of foreigners or non-Turks. So that meant people who were ethnically Greek or Armenian or Jewish, whose families might have lived in Turkey for 500 or 600 years, were considered foreigners because they weren't Muslims and they weren't Turks. So a lot of them were expelled. That resulted in a lot of Turkish Jews making aliyah without really having the choice. They had to leave. And then much more recently, as a result of October 7th, as Arab anti-Israel propaganda has ramped up around the world, it has done so with particular ferocity in Turkey, so that people who I know are not anti-Semitic and have lots of close Jewish friends and even family members still say horribly vicious anti-Israeli things, because that is reflective of the political and social climate in Turkey these days. Now, I will say, if you want to speculate on Erdogan's future, that as Turkish young people become more and more connected to the internet and more wired into the outside world, they are not becoming more fundamentalist. I think Erdogan's voter base is shrinking pretty consistently, and he's clearly responsible for economic policies which have resulted in rampant devaluation of the Turkish lira and economic hardship for many, if not all, Turks.
Tom, thanks so much. We will talk more next week.
I look forward to it.
This Saturday night and next Sunday are Tisha B'Av, the 9th of Av, a fast day commemorating a series of disasters that befell the Jewish people on this particular date on the calendar. The tragedies we remember on Tisha B'Av include the destruction of both the first and second temples in Jerusalem, as well as the fall of Beitar in 135 CE, ending the Bar Kokhba revolt, and the expulsion of the Jews from Spain in 1492, ending that great Jewish civilization. All of these painful events took place on this ninth day of the month of Av, kind of midsummer. We remember them all over the course of a service Saturday night, when we chant the incredibly sad but musically beautiful Book of Lamentations from the Hebrew Bible. As Psalm 137 says, "By the waters of Babylon we lay down and wept as we remembered Zion," recalling the destruction of that first temple all the way back in 586 BCE, more than 2,500 years ago, first of these great losses.
By the waters of Babylon, we lay down and wept for thee, Zion. We remember thee, remember thee, remember thee, Zion. By the waters of Babylon, we lay down and wept for thee, Zion. We lay down and wept, for thee, Zion.
The Waters of Babylon for Tisha B'Av, this coming Saturday night at 8 p.m. at Beit Simcha. That was Don McLean's beautiful and sad version. My friends, I don't know how to say this. I'm not sure how I got talked into doing musical improvisation with the From the Top troupe at Unscrewed Theater on August 3rd. I have seen improv shows, watched them on TV on Whose Line Is It Anyway, and certainly been part of scripted shows. But I've never been in front of a live audience with no clue what I'm going to say or sing next. I hope you'll come to laugh with me, or at me, and the very talented troupe at Unscrewed Theater. You can join Congregation Beit Simcha there for a great evening of kosher deli food and improv fun. We call it pastrami and schmaltz. Sign up at BeitSimchaTucson.org, BEITSIMCHA Tucson.org. Show is a week from tonight, Sunday, August 3rd, 6 p.m. at 4500 East Speedway near Swan. We'll start with beer and wine and non-alcoholic beverages and then have fabulous fun with the From the Top musical improv troupe with me, guest star Rabbi Sam Kohan. Very nervous about this. All followed at 7:30 p.m. by a delicious kosher deli dinner, pastrami or salami on rye with a veggie option, pickles, salads, wine, beer, soda, more, lots of fun. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BEITSIMCHA Tucson.org. Sign up for pastrami and schmaltz right now or call 520-256-5675. BeitSimchaTucson.org for pastrami and schmaltz. It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. The Chabad house in Harvard challenged the Harvard University oarsmen to a rowing contest, but they soon discovered the Harvard crew was recording practice times twice as fast as their own. A Chabad captain sent a spy across to Harvard to find out why and how they could row so fast. The spy returned a few hours later. "No," says the Chabad captain, "tell us everything." "Well," says the spy, they do everything the other way round to us." "Explain," says the captain. "It's simple," says the spy. "They've got 8 men rowing and 1 man yelling." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week we start reading Devarim, Deuteronomy, final book in the Torah. The name Deuteronomy captures a midrashic explanation of the essence of this book. It means repeated text, in Hebrew called Mishneh Torah. This reflects the fact that the whole book of Devarim is made up of a few long sermons by Moses, recapitulating the events and commandments established over the previous 3 books of the Torah. Well, that's not bad talking for a man with a serious speech impediment. Deuteronomy begins at the end of the Israelites' journey to the borders of Canaan, the promised land, soon to become Israel. Moses informs the people of Israel he has now led them for 40 years, and now they've come to a place in time of greatest importance. Moses then recalls the time when the Israelites were beginning to get organized, how he appointed judges and magistrates to help him with the needs of the people. And the great leader remembers the instructions he gave those leaders: be fair and absolutely even-handed in dispensing justice. Do not favor the rich. Do not favor the poor. Show no partiality. Simply seek that which is just and right in the world. Well, this is only the beginning of Moses' long orations, his last hurrah, so to speak, although he is now, by biblical calculation, 120 years old. Though Moses' control over his people has waned, though his speech is tinged by the bitter knowledge he will not be permitted to enter the promised land, still Moses teaches us yet again the greatest lesson. In this uncertain and often severely unjust world, we Jews must be pledged to create acts and systems of ethics and justice in all circumstances. What greater calling could any people have? When we return in a moment on this midsummer edition of Too Jewish, we'll hear the news of Jews round the world.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary from Rabbi Sam Kohan.
The largest synagogue in Judaism's Reconstructionist movement is moving to cut ties with its denominational body over what its leaders describe as a failure to confront hostility to Israel among Reconstructioning Judaism-affiliated rabbis and rabbinical students. This rupture is emblematic of a wider debate among American Jews about Zionism and the boundaries of legitimate criticism of Israel. The clergy and lay leaders of Kehilat Israel, an affluent congregation in Pacific Palisades, California, notified members of the plan to disaffiliate by email last week. I must note that I know that congregation well, and a lifelong friend, Cantor Chaim Frankel, has been its cantor for decades. So, as they said, affirming their continued embrace of Reconstructionist values and spiritual practices, the synagogue of Kehilat Israel's leaders said they could no longer remain affiliated with Reconstructing Judaism, the central institution that oversees the rabbinical school and leads about 100 member congregations. Over many decades, our clergy and lay leadership have stayed engaged with the movement, but over the past few years, our voice has been ignored, said the email to the congregation. Critical changes have taken place in Reconstructing Judaism, which have led us to conclude it is in our best interest to sever our affiliation with the movement. The letter cites concerns over the rabbinical college's ordination of students who hold anti-Zionist views, as well as what Kehilat Israel's leadership describes as a hostile atmosphere toward Zionism on campus. The congregation, whose membership is around 900 families, largest Reconstructionist congregation in America, maybe in the world, is asking congregants to vote in favor of a bylaws change finalizing this disaffiliation. Financially, the change means that KI, which was hard hit by the Pacific Palisades wildfires in January, will no longer contribute 1% of its budget to the national movement. Congregational dues make up about 10% of Reconstructing Judaism's annual budget of roughly $5 million, meaning the loss of dues from KI, even as the largest congregation in the movement, will probably not have a substantial financial impact. Still, Kehilat Israel's proposed disaffiliation is a symbolic blow to Reconstructing Judaism, with roots that go back to Rabbi Mordechai Kaplan's radical 20th century reimagining of Jewish communal life. Reconstructionism has long presented itself as a small but influential stream of liberal Judaism, pluralistic, egalitarian, and intellectually open. But in recent years, that openness has brought challenges. Those challenges came out publicly in the wake of Hamas's October 7, 2023 war crimes atrocity attack on Israel and the ensuing war in Gaza. Reconstructionist rabbis and rabbinical students were prominent among anti-Zionist movements, including organizations like the Jewish Voice for Peace. In June of 2024, a little more than a year ago, Reconstructing Judaism issued a statement affirming its support for progressive Zionism and a two-state solution. That statement was seen as a move to reassert Zionism as a core tenet of the movement. But it appears to have come too late and fallen short in the eyes of a number of long-standing constituents like Kehillat Israel. Notwithstanding the Reconstructionist movement's avowed affirmation of Israel's right to exist, its recent actions say otherwise, the synagogue's leaders wrote. There can be many opinions about Israeli politics, but Israel's legitimacy is inalienable. That is a platform on which Kehillat Israel will stand. The world needs to see the Jewish people stand united in support of the people of Israel. In a statement about the proposed disaffiliation, Rabbi Deborah Waxman, president and CEO of Reconstructing Judaism, who recently announced that she will be stepping down after 13 years at the helm, said, of course, she was disappointed. The flashpoint came last year. Two Reconstructionist rabbinical students announced they were leaving the school in an open letter published in the Jewish Daily Forward. Talia Werber and Stephen Goldstein cited a pervasive culture of anti-Zionism, intimidation, and lack of open dialogue. They said that after forming a small pro-Israel student group following the October 7th atrocities, they faced isolation and hostility from fellow students at Reconstructing Judaism and insufficient support from the school's leadership. They describe a student body where many espoused anti-Israel rhetoric, labeled Israel settler colonial apartheid state, and where positive connections to Israel were discouraged. Reconstructionist rabbinical college graduates and students make up at least 25 of the 45 members of the Rabbinical Council of Jewish Voice for Peace, the largest Jewish anti-Zionist organization. In other news, an agreement was reached last week between Columbia University and the Trump administration, permitting the restoration of much of the $1.2 billion Columbia receives annually from the federal government in grants and other awards. This apparently brought to a close many months of tense negotiations over anti-Semitism on the school's campus. While Columbia does not admit to wrongdoing with this resolution agreement, the institution's leaders have recognized repeatedly that Jewish students and faculty have experienced painful, unacceptable incidents, that reform was and is needed, Columbia wrote in a statement announcing the deal, a kind of capitulation, you could say. In other news, the top two leaders of Friends of the Israel Defense Forces resigned last week amid an internal reckoning at the organization, just a couple of weeks after a leak revealed widespread allegations of fiscal mismanagement and a toxic workplace culture. The leadership shakeup follows an internal investigation commissioned by the nonprofit's board of directors. According to the organization's message, the investigation identified certain issues related to organizational culture and staff morale, but found no fraud, no misappropriations of funds, no theft or kickbacks by or to Levovitz or any other employee. And that's the Too Jewish News of Jews Around the World. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs.
in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, for this very special mid-summer edition. Join us next week for another great show of Too Jewish. Our guest will be Shanna Fold, creator and host of the Israeli Daily Podcast. And join us at Congregation Beit Simcha every Friday night. Services in Oneg Shabbat at 6:30 p.m. Saturday morning too. 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. Shabbat morning services, always followed by a delicious Kiddush in person and available on our Facebook page. Oh, and don't forget, August 3rd, a week from tonight, Pastrami and Schmaltz, a great musical improv show followed by kosher pastrami, kosher salami, lots of great food and fun. And I'm the guest star, Terrified. Our playout this morning comes from a wonderful Jewish singer-songwriter, Regina Spektor. It's her upbeat song, Fidelity. Regina Spektor was born in Moscow to Jewish musician parents, moved to America, and is a really underappreciated, beautiful musical artist. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, a healthy week, and a week we pray profoundly of peace.
Shook it up. Nobody fully, always one foot on the ground, and by protecting my heart truly, I got lost in the sounds I hear in my mind. All of these voices I hear in my mind, all of these words I hear in my mind. This music, and it breaks my heart, and it breaks my heart, and it breaks my heart, when it breaks my heart. Suppose I never ever met you. Suppose we never.
Too Jewish is sponsored by Too Jewish Radio Programs, Tucson, Arizona.
It breaks my heart, and it breaks my heart, and it breaks my heart.